Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 27th, 2012. You're listening to the finest, longest-running, greatest show ever on the internet. I am Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long, and I'm a little worried that my partner was the head cheerleader at Southern Connecticut Lincoln High School.
Lincoln? No Lincoln. You were close, though. I actually was a cheerleader. I think I said that before on the show.
I did not know that. I don't remember that.
Well, I wasn't a real cheerleader. It was the powder puff thing when the girls played.
So you were an athletic supporter.
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty cool. We wore fake boobs and wigs and put makeup on. It was great.
Yeah.
I reached my inner self.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of looking to the past, I have my next big idea, Scott.
Yeah, because all your other big ideas have really worked out well for you, haven't they?
I got to tell you, I got to stop doing this because eventually someone's going to take one of my ideas, run with them, and then we're going to have a nasty lawsuit on our hands. Because I'll be able to prove that they listened to our show and stole my idea that I'm bringing up. So, there are a lot of people that, you know, a lot of times, I think even we sort of sparked it a little bit when we said top five people you'd want to play poker with. And then we said living or dead, real or fake.
Yep.
So it got me to thinking,
fake is so...
Yeah, well...
offensive. Can't we just say fictional?
Fictional. How's that? Fictional.
Yeah, I mean, some of these...
Because we don't want to offend all those fake people that are...
Oh, yeah. These fictional people, some of them are very solid, invented human beings.
Yeah,
so to call them fake.
They might take offense to them.
We haven't even met them yet.
But imagine, if you will, playing poker against Johnny Moss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or Stu Unger. You know, you can't do it now. If you've never done it, then you're just not going to be able to. But I have been inspired by Tupac. Apparently, there was a hologram performance of Tupac recently at some show or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wait a minute. Hologram heads-up matches. You load in the image of Johnny Moss. You animate him.
Mm-hmm.
You have someone who's played against him, like Doyle Brunson, do the AI where he's like, all right, this is what Johnny Moss would do in this spot. So now you can play against Johnny Moss and the way Johnny Moss would play. And then, of course, everything else. He's played against Stu Unger. Stu Unger was incredibly aggressive. You know, when the antes kicked in, Stu would be shoving on you all the time, putting you to a test. You know, whatever it is. So I'm just starting to think that maybe those top five lists we came up with, they aren't that far away. I mean, really, if you could do Tupac in a hologram and sort of manipulate him, kind of like they did on The Sopranos with the mother when she died prematurely, and they kind of just used clips of her from the past. And
yeah, not quite a hologram, but I don't know.
Right, but I mean, you could take footage of... like.
I mean, if you want to go The Sopranos route, we could just put...
that's true.
Put a Stu Unger wig on me and call me Stu Unger, and shoot the camera angle from the back or something.
All right, so we do the hologram thing where we just take his image and then they sort of project it and manipulate it with computer graphics. You know, we'll get Stan Winston involved here and get the Terminator trying to fold on me and stuff. But no, but I mean, I think that would be so cool. You know, we're talking about these heads. Remember the time we went to Vegas and did the old Palouse, whatever, Expo, whatever it was, and you and I were looking at the heads-up machines and played each other heads-up at the bar version or whatever, and...
Sure. Yeah.
Imagine, if you will, going to a poker room, and then you're like, you know, I want to play heads up today. And they're like, well, we can't afford to put a dealer off for you to play heads up again. But wait, I want to play heads up against Johnny Moss. Oh, well, come on over to the corner over here. We have, I mean, you know, you and I were at Derby Lane yesterday, and they had that little booth, the money booth, where you qualify or something, you get in, and all the fake money goes up, or real money, I don't know what they use, but then you can grab it. What's that?
Ticket dispenser, but that's all right. I know what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. So what if you know, okay, well, over here in the corner, we have our heads-up hologram match-off, you know, whatever you want to call it, and then...
hologram match-off.
You know, and then you go sit there, and you put in your money.
Idea generator you are, marketer you are not.
That's right. I'm fine with that. You know, let somebody give me 51% of the company and take off with it.
All right, well, I hate to, you know, burst your bubble. Actually, no, I love bursting your bubble. But two problems with your
answer here. All right.
First of all, Tupac isn't dead.
Uh-huh.
He's hanging out with Elvis.
Those guys are somewhere in a mall in Minneapolis.
So apparently, your National Enquirer subscription lapsed, and we'll have to take care of that. So, so I don't really know whether this hologram you saw of Tupac was real, or if it's just him.
Just really him. Yeah, good point.
And then the bigger problem is these things are freaky. Right? I don't even watch CNN anymore for election coverage because they do this thing. They beam people in from across the country, and it's freaky. I mean, it took me my entire adult life to get over to the president display at the Magic Kingdom. You know, their little animatronic things, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden CNN brought out this beaming Scotty up crap. And now you want to turn it into something I have to pay for? I don't know about that. You're going to have to get some kind of social acceptance of this strange foreign technology before I think this takes off.
I got to tell you, you know, I've always wanted to utter the line, you know, I got to let you go, Mr. Moss. I mean, I always wanted to say it, but I want to say it to him, you know, I don't want to just say it. Well, you know, the big problem, obviously, is that you have a hologram sitting across from you, and there's no money to be won, because who's putting up the money for him, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, if you're playing it as a video game or something, you know.
That's true, yeah. So, see, three strikes.
Well.
Back to that later. Now, I wonder, though, because, you know, when poker players probably don't have estates managed by other companies now, like some of these, you know, celebrities from the 40s and stuff, you
right.
know, so that's why, you know, I think it was like, you know, Gene Kelly all of a sudden was animatronically selling vacuum cleaners, and people went,
yeah.
How did that happen? Well, yeah. You know, he doesn't own his estate, so people were just, you know, trample all over him. So, you know, I would hope there would get some buy-in from the family here, you know, because that would be kind of weird too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's what I would think. I think they'd get their rights to do it and stuff. But
if you got the buy-in and they really made it, not only the AI, but personality, that would be really cool.
Exactly. That was my whole point. It was just playing against the actual person, but you put a hologram up so that it's more real and likable. And you know, they could do it with Tupac. They could do it with Johnny Moss. There's enough footage and photos of the guy that they could manipulate it and do it somehow, I would think. You know,
my first opponent, when you get this off and running... Wild Bill Hickok.
Okay.
And, you know, we're going to be in a pretty nasty duel there, and then I'm going to say, yo, Bill, 12 o'clock.
Yeah, what's behind you?
Left shoulder. Totally save his life, and he's totally going to be an enemy for the rest of his hologram life.
And, you know, I brought up the whole, you know, person who's not with us kind of thing, but, I mean, it could be anything. You could have Doyle upload his image and sit for the show, and remember when we had the TJ Cloutier game on, and you know, you were imagining Cloutier he talks to you when you make a mistake, and he's like, "Oh, that's a bad play," or you know, whatever. So you could literally just do this now with everybody. You know, you get Moneymaker and all the people just to sit down for a few hours with our tech team, and you know,
yeah, it's kind of like a Legion of Heroes thing or something. The Hall of Justice.
The hologram of justice.
Yes. Oh, there you go. Now you're marketing.
Well, I'm just saying, you could have anybody now loaded, and then you choose to who to play, and you play, and they'll put their style in, you know?
See, now this is actually made for TV, isn't it? Because, you know, TV poker's lost people like me because of animation. But I can see kind of combining this with, like, Iron Chef. So you have some, you know, lucky dweeb like me that wins his way into some kind of online contest, and I'm sitting there on the stage with Tom Bergeron or somebody, and he's like, "Who is Scott going to play today?" And then, you know, whoosh, these seven hologram people, you know, come out of the fog-induced stage, and one of them stands up and walks towards me. Now that.
Yeah.
That's some killer teeth.
Yeah, we're gonna do that with Johnny Moss's hologram there, buddy.
Well, doesn't mean,
we're going to get him come out of the fog and walk across the stage and shake your hand, too. but really, though, I mean, even what you're kind of onto something there, too. It'd be kind of cool to have, like Danny Negreanu playing heads up against somebody, but he doesn't know who it is, and he has to try to figure out who it is by the way they play. Or, you know, I mean, I don't know. So there's all kinds of ideas now. We're mixing it all up. I want the hologram idea. Someone launch it. Give me 51% of the company. We're on our way.
And you can play with hologram ships, too.
Yes, yes. Just pretend to push all in. Your fingers will, like, kind of go through the hologram. I'm telling you, man, there's something there. Don't be surprised if you don't see it.
All right, I'm gonna patent the hologram of justice today.
And, well, I mean, I know you're not a fan of Star Wars, but do you remember when they were playing, the Wookiees playing against...
The Wookiees? You know, aren't the Wookiees on Star Wars?
That's what I said, Star Wars.
Oh, I thought you said Star Trek.
Oh, no. Star Wars. Well, if I said Star Trek, oh, my God. But I'm pretty sure I said Star Wars. Anyway, but they're playing that sort of chess-like game, but the players are holograms, and they're walking on the board and stuff. And right. I'm like, it's not that much of a stretch.
No. Hey, they're doing that in the 70s.
There you go.
We need to get George Lucas working on this.
I think so. I'm telling you, man. Well, there's something to be
magic.
There's some money to be made. Hey, at least it was poker-related.
That is true.
Most of your stories start out with, like, making wheat toast and trying to find a parking spot. I mean, there's no poker in your stories.
There is never a boring story about trying to find a parking spot. I'm sorry. It's pure comic gold. Well, speaking of comic gold, no one likes to go to memorial services. But it's nice when you can go to one and... laugh and really enjoy the happy times that you had with somebody that you've lost. And I think we both experienced that last week at our service for our friend John Lanier.
Absolutely. You know, one of the best things about going to those things also is learning about them. You know, it's so weird because we see one side of John, and there are so many other sides to him. And, you know, as soon as you walked in the front door, you know, the place that we were meeting, it was like, wow, we had no idea. The place was decorated in Star Trek memorabilia.
Yeah.
And we had no idea that he was a huge Star Trek fan. And then we found out later that he was very, very into Civil War. Mm-hmm. And would go to reenactments and correct all the authorities there when they got things wrong. And,
I love that story.
You know, and it was just great. You know, it was great to share our side of it, but to hear other people's sides of it and to really get to know him. And you always think you know somebody, and then you learn a little bit more. It was great. It was nice. We had a lot of support from our friends. Annie F. King was there. Andrew showed up for the tournament. And then Gambit and Faso came to both. He came to the memorial service. Faso had to go to work, but Gambit also came to the tournament. And I got to share a little story from it, if you don't mind. You know, we spoke, and, you know, a lot of people, you and I were the last ones to speak. And it seemed like there wasn't a dry eye in the house when we were done, and it was really moving. But after that, they had some Southern food served, which we thought was appropriate because, you know, where John is from, and the food was great. So we're sitting around, the four of us, me, you, Faso, and Gambit, and the conversation was going all over the place. And then somehow it got on that new game that's out, that Draw Something. Yeah. And it's not new, but it's still kind of very popular. And Gambit's like, yeah, I play it. And I said, I play it too. I said, here's my name. And he says, all right, I'll draw something for you, and we'll get you into the system, and we'll start playing against each other. I said, okay. So his first drawing. Now, if anybody doesn't know what this game is, you get three words that you can try to draw, and one's easy, one's medium, and one's hard. And you pick the one to draw, and then if you draw it and someone else draws it, then someone else can figure out what you drew. You both get the equivalent of the coins that, you know, you get for drawing that thing. So now we're here, and we're in the middle of this sort of room filled with Star Trek memorabilia, and the first word that he gets to draw for me was Spock.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was really eerie. You know, I mean, it was so weird. He got to draw
Spock.
Sitting
in a room filled with Star Trek.
Yep. And it's almost as if, you know, John was having some fun with us and making sure that that was the word, you know, that he could draw for me to remind us that, hey, he's here sitting next to us, wishing he was playing in the home game with us right now kind of thing. And it was just unbelievable. And then after that, it didn't even stop. You know, we went to the tournament, and he's now become sort of famous for liking to limp with Ace King in a tournament.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a drawing hand.
Yeah. It is a drawing hand. And it was funny. We all talked about it. We mentioned it, you know, in our own little circle when we first learned of the news that he had passed. And when we played in the tournament, they asked me to say something real quick to launch it off, and I said something to the effect of, and when you get Ace King for the first time today, make sure you limp with it, because that's what John would have done. And everybody kind of giggled, and we started playing. And my first hand of the tournament was Ace King.
Yep.
And I didn't limp with it. I don't know why. I thought, you know what, John, I think you'd want me to raise here. And so I did, and I got two callers, and I flopped trip kings on the first hand. So it was just really eerie that you could feel John throughout the whole day, and those two really, it's kind of spooky, you know. It was really kind of cool, and it just really felt like John was there and having a good time with us. And three of his family members made the final table of the tournament. So, I mean, it was...
His son won it.
Yeah, and his son won it. So, I mean, that was just, it was just incredible. And his son says that he's the one who taught him how to play poker. So,
yeah.
It was just a great day for us, and a little insider stuff, and we're sorry to have to do that, but, you know, we want to share in our lives, and that's what happened to us, and it was a great day.
Yeah, absolutely. And the good news is I outlasted you in the tournament.
Yeah.
Which is amazing, considering I only played half the hands.
I think that's why, though. It's true. The phone kept ringing for you, because we were on deadline, too. It was really a tough time for the magazine to be away from the magazine that day. And your phone kept ringing with ad problems and late ads and whatever, and you kept getting up, and they kept blinding you off, and you're at my table. I'm like, this is great.
Yeah, it didn't seem like I was gone that long, but when I sat back down after the final phone call, I'm like, wow, I'm short stacked, and I didn't even cause it.
I know.
Normally, I cause it.
Destiny, no matter what, you're always meant to be a short stack, whether you play or not. It's funny.
It was a great tournament. Yeah, you know, we raised some money for prostate cancer awareness, and certainly hope it helps. And then you know, I always get upset too, because when I'm the first one out of the tournament, I go donk off like $7,000 in the cash games.
Right.
While I'm waiting for you to final table and cash and not give me any of it. And then this time I make the final table, which, you know, well, I'm going to make it sound impressive, even though it probably wasn't as impressive as it was. And you were out before me and went to the cash game and did not lose $7,000. That's always how it works.
I know. It's weird. I went out on a bluff, which I never ever do. I misread my hand. What, sort of. I had like King Jack. It was a short-handed table. I had two tight people behind me in the blinds, and I was like getting kind of short, but not short enough where I couldn't make a raise. So I just thought, you know what? I haven't played no hand in a long time. I'll make a raise. I looked down, I saw a king and a jack. I didn't look at the suits, I just saw king jack. So I made a raise, got a call. The flop came, queen, four, two diamonds. And I thought, all right, this guy has to have a queen to call me here, given the strength I showed. So I'm going to shove. He took forever to call. And he did call. And I thought I had king jack of diamonds. And I had the king of diamonds, jack of hearts. He turns over ace of diamonds, jack of diamonds. I'm like, Miss Deal, I had the jack of diamonds. And I don't. I had king jack, and I went blank blank, and he actually won with ace high. Didn't make his flush, but ace high ended up beating it. So I never go out on a bluff. I mean, never, ever. And I did, and it was so weird. I was like, you know, I need to be punished. Let me go play in a cash game. And it was hilarious. It was the most hilarious cash game I think I'd been in ages. It was one of those 1-2 games where the max buy-in's 100 and the min is 20, and everybody at the table just buys in for 20 no matter what. They just keep rebuying for 20 and shoving. And here's like the last hand that I watched, because you got knocked out and you came over to me and you're like, all right, sorry, let me let the blinds get to me. The second to last hand of the last hand, this is how it went. Remember, it's a 1-2 game. It went limp, limp, I folded. Limp, limp, all in for 28. Call, 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 call. Okay? four limpers, an all-in, and then the four limpers called. I mean, it was unbelievable. The pot was over $100, easy, and like the best hand shown was pocket tens. And he won, and I think a guy won with an ace on the river because he had like ace jack or something. I couldn't believe it. $2 limp, call 28. It was just sick. There's no way you win that game. You just have to shove every time you have a really good hand. Hope you get one caller.
Yeah, and my best part of this story, too, is that this is the first time I think you played that game there. And I've played it a lot. Not recently, but in the past, I used to play there a lot. And it is. It's like a 1 to 20 spread limit game is really what it is.
Yeah.
You know, because people just keep buying in for the table minimum, which is $20, and they end up getting it all in because you can't do anything with that much money other than get it all in. And it's really like everybody buys a $20 lottery ticket every hand.
It's funny because I walked up to the counter and I was like, you got any open seats? He's like, yeah, 1-2. I was like, all right, give me 200. He goes, 200 what? I was like, $200. He's like, well, I'll give you 200, but you only put 100 on the table. I was like, oh, all right, well, then just give me 100. So then I walk over there and nobody had 100.
Yeah.
They all had like 38, 48. One guy might have had like 70 or something, but I was like, what am I doing? And Annie Up King sits next to us, Keith, because he got knocked out same time as me. We literally went out like 9-10 or 10-9 or 10-11 or something. And he sat down next to me. He buys in for like 40. First hand, he shoves his 40. I'm like, what are you doing? Well, he knew what he was doing because he knew he must have played there, you know?
It's not his first rodeo.
Yep. He got called, had the best of it, won it, and doubled up like in one hand. And I was like, wow. Or, well, not doubled up because some people only buy him for 20, but he improved by 50% in one hand. I was like, oh my God, this is not my game. So I just sat there and waited for you to get out. But it was a good day overall. It was a nice moment. And plus, we raised some money, too. So that was good. I got to tell you, my ideas, you know, they go over sometimes. Sometimes they don't. I don't know if the hologram idea is going to go over, but I know one thing that didn't. And it shocked the hell out of me, too. Was the Helmuth impression idea. What's going on here? I mean, you know, you listen to these radio shows, these sports call-in shows, and they're like, hey, call us and do your best impression of this or that. And they get 100 calls in one afternoon. We get one call. One call on this Helmuth thing. I think, you know what it was? I think Helmuth, like, probably put a cease and desist order that we didn't know about.
Maybe.
Stop everybody from doing it.
I'll admit, when you first mentioned it to me, I'm like, you know what, that's a good idea. Let's go with it. And then I think
miscalculated.
I'm looking to make up a word here, and I can't come up with one.
Miscalculated?
Miscalculated, very good. But miscalculated the fact that, that our listeners aren't our typical sport jock radio listeners.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, what works there isn't going to work here, and that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, I guess.
And then, second of all, that there's just so much disdain for Phil Helmuth Jr. out there that no one even wants to make fun of him because that just gives him more ammunition.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it ultimately ended up being. And, you know, in a weird way, that's kind of cool. That's like saying, you know what? This guy is all ego. I'm not going to feed his ego any more than I have to.
Yeah, so we should let him know that we opened it up to a contest and no one participated. How are you feeling now?
One person did.
One person.
Poker Geek, you ruined it.
Yeah, and you know, he did it because he felt bad for us. That's what it was. Like, he didn't even want to do it. You know he didn't want to do it, but it's funny. So our hotline's 813-448-1120. We know you're not going to call and do this because it's too late now anyway. But if you do call that number and leave a message for us and we use it on the show, we'll give you something cool. Let's hear Poker Geek's impression of Phil Helmuth.
Hello, Annie Up Magazine. This is 11-time bracelet winner Phil Helmuth here. I was playing poker at some underground clubs with Derek Jeter when I heard that you were having a contest for impersonating the one and only Poker Brat. Well, nobody can do a better job than me. So after drinking some Dom and listening to Gin and Juice by Jay-Z on the private jet back home, I gave you a call. The kids may think they can do a better job than me, but just like at the tables, I'll set the trap and they will give me all their chips. Well, I gotta run and play some golf with Michael Jordan. Just remember, I can dodge bullets, baby.
See, that was good. He did the name-dropping thing, and that was good.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to win anything there, buddy. I can't give you anything for one person entering the contest. I mean,
well, yeah, but I mean, since it's a hotline, he does get
that. That's right, he does.
He gets a deck of Jay Design playing cards, official playing cards of Annie Up. Everybody else can pick up your own decks in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. And Poker Geek, thanks for saving our face here and at least giving us something to show.
Just remember, you didn't win it for your impression. You won it because you called.
Hey, you can't win if you don't enter.
Can't win if you don't play.
Right, exactly. So I'm sure there are 120,000 Annie Up listeners out there right now going, darn it!
Yeah, I could have got those
free
cards.
If I would have taken 12 seconds to call, I might have beaten Poker Geek and got
all he had to do was call number and go, idiot, and hang up, and you might have won cards.
You might have won.
That's all it would have taken. Oh, well.
Let's not give Zorag any more ideas. All right, well, we got a mailbag this week. It comes from your land, those nutmeggers up there in the Connecticut.
Yep.
Our new friend Adam writes in, and he started out by saying, I just want to start by saying how much I love the show.
Awesome.
You keep it interesting and funny, and the hand situation of the week is fantastic. I also love the April Fool's joke on O'Malley's move. You might be the only one, Adam.
I think you might be the only one who got it. Everyone else is trying to set the hand.
All right, enough kissing up for us. Do you have something really to say here, Adam? Oh, he does. All right.
Okay.
So here's what he wrote. I ran into a tough spot while I was playing in my first live multi-table tourney. We were two away from the money, and I find myself short-stacked. Never a problem, Adam. Never a problem. Lines are 4,500, 9,000 with no ante.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, we got to stop for a minute. 4,500, 9,000?
Well, maybe they started with 1,000, 2,000 or something. You don't know.
That is a weird level right there, man. That is one weird level. And there's no ante. I know this is keeping the 500s around.
It would be great. It would be 4,500, 9,000 with a 5 ante.
A $5 ante. Oh, man. Okay, go ahead.
All right, so it's 45, 9,000. Our hero is in the big blind. He has roughly 80,000 after posting the blind. The under the gun player raises it to 42,000 to go, and it folds to me. He says he's a solid but sometimes overly aggressive player, and he's also been bullying a lot and managed to take the chip lead on the previous hand. I look down at ace 9. What's my move here?
Okay, well, here's my thing. You're in the big blind. You still have 80K left, which is not exactly 10 big blinds, but there's no antes, so, you know, and you're now in the big blind, so, I mean, I just feel like there's a better hand here. First of all, I don't know how many people are at this table. I'm assuming it's a full hand, full table, and if it is, if this guy has the word solid at all in his description, which you have, I don't care if he's overly aggressive, he's under the gun and raised, and he raised a ton, you know, and to me it sounds like it could be sort of a vulnerable pair, but the fact that it's half our stack to call,
right,
which you can't do. You have to either shove or fold, and if you're going to shove, likely you're behind. If it's a decent pair, you're hoping that it's under nines, and if it's over nines, you're screwed because all you have is the ace, and if he has ace king, which is very likely, or ace queen, you're totally dead to the 3-9 or so. I just feel like this is a fold and move on hand. I realize you're getting short, but you're not that short, you know. You've already paid the big blind, so I mean, really, I feel like you need to move on with this hand and just this fold.
Well, yeah, this is my problem with people when they get short stacked. They're like, oh, I've only got less than 10 blinds, I'm desperate. No, you're not desperate.
No,
you're precarious. And you have to be smart. You actually have to be smarter then, I think, than when you have a big stack. And here's the thing is, I want to be the first one in a pot when I'm short stacked. I don't want to be calling off my chips, unless, of course, I have like ace-ace or king-king or something good like that. Ace-nine does not come close to being that.
No.
So, yeah, you're short stacked here, but, you know, you got a small blind coming up after you fold here, so 75,000. And then you got another orbit, and again, we don't know how many people here. You know, be the first one in or have a really strong hand. And again, you're right, under the gun, too. I mean, you're right. I totally dismiss the fact that he's overly aggressive and might be bullying me around. You know, it's fine to stick up for yourself in a schoolyard fight with a bully. But, you know, if he's pistol whipping you with a pistol, you know, you got the plastic fork from the cafeteria, that might not be the best time to pick on him. You might want to, like, wait around and attack him later on, you know?
Yeah, he's not bullying from under the gun. He'd be bullying you from the button or the cutoff, but he's not bullying you from the under the gun. He's got to have a hand here. And the other thing, too, I like to be, if I'm going to shove, I like to be the first one in shoving, yeah, not absolutely. Calling. Yeah. And then one other thing, you might, in this situation, you might get away with calling and then shoving with the stop-and-go play because you have the position to do that. I don't know if this is the right situation for that, but... That's,
yeah, you're right. That's a legitimate play.
Legitimate play. Calling and shoving, maybe, but yeah. Obviously shoving here or folding. I would choose folding over anything. And you said you pay the small
money.
You
have a lot of fold equity if you wait and shove your 75, yep. Or actually you'll have 80 here. Well, 75
later.
Small blind next time. You know, that's a lot of fold equity.
Yep.
You know, so that's better. I mean, the stop and go can be effective, but, you know, if the guy's overly aggressive, he's probably going to call you. So if you're doing the stop and go, you're really going to have to hope to hit something on the flop.
Yeah, and even like you said,
catch it after you get all in.
If he calls, it's 40 to 80. It's going to be almost. It's going to be like 90 in the pot, and you're betting roughly 30 something on a stop and go. He's probably not going to be able to fold anyway. Then you're hoping that the cards that come out are over his cards or don't hit his cards. So it's probably not an effective stop and go play here anyway. So I would just fold his hand. What do you do?
All right, well, he said, I ended up shoving because I feel like he's raising any two cards. He snap calls and turns over pocket tens. Brick city all the way to the river. Tournament over.
Yeah.
I feel like I made the right move, but being this was my first MTT, I'm not sure. Well, you know, hey, you live and learn.
Well, like I said, I think it is one or the other. It's a shove or a call. I just feel like shoving, we're behind. I think we solidly said why he was behind or could be behind and should be behind in this situation, and he was. And it was really almost the worst it could be other than pocket aces or pocket nines. So.
Well, and this easily could have gone our hero's way if he spikes an ace and it all works out. But my problem is he says, I felt like he's raising any two cards. All right. And that's correct, but you have to have a decent enough hand to call that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, with any two cards, remember, ace nine, even if he has, like, seven deuce.
You still...
You know, you're not that big of a favorite.
Right, you still have to dodge that.
Yeah, so... all right. Well, hey, Adam, you didn't win the tournament, but you are going to win a great piece of swag, a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues, including hats, T-shirts, and gifts in the AnteUp store at anteupstore.com.
All right. Call the floor this week comes from Michael Young. He says, I'm playing a tournament in a Las Vegas casino. Levels are 100, 200. Pot was raised to 800. One player calls... and another shoves for $1,275. It's called by the original raiser, and the first caller asks if he can raise. Floor says no. I thought a raise was in increments of the big blind and thought he should have been able to raise.
You know, this one trips me up every time. And it's because, I mean, we've had a question like this before, and there is a lot of minutiae involved in this, depending on what game and everything like that. So, but this is what Jody says. Rule 37 of the Poker Tournament Directors Association states, quote, a raise must be at least the size of the previous bet or raise of the current betting round. And no limit in pot limit, an all-in wager of less than a full raise does not reopen the betting to a player who has already acted, end quote.
So, you left out the word largest in there.
Oh, largest?
A raise must be at least the size of the largest previous bet.
Sorry.
Or raise. That's pretty important. So...
yeah, so Jody went on to say the raise from 200 to 800 is a raise of 600. Since the all-in was only 475 more for a total of 1275, it doesn't qualify as a full raise. Any player who had not called the 800 before the all-in of 1275 could raise, but not the original raiser or any callers between the raiser and the all-in player. It reminds everybody that you can download a complete copy of the TDA rules at pokertda.com.
Yep, that's right. I mean, it makes sense. And I never know how to answer that question whenever I'm playing with beginners when somebody raises 10 and the next person wants to raise and they say 12. And you're like, no, you can't make it 12. You got to make it 20. And they're like, why? I never really know what to say to them. I once read an explanation of it, but I never really know what to say to them other than that's the rule. Just like, you know... kings beat queens. I mean, it's a rule. It's a rule. You have to raise And it's just, I never really know what to say. I mean, I guess because you can get out of hand doing a $1 raise here, $1 raise there, that kind of thing. But it's just a weird thing. But it's the rule, so you got to live by it.
Yep. All right. Well, hey, Mike, we appreciate you sending in your call. So remind everybody else to send them to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. You can also send your hands of the week and your mailbag questions, or, you know, just pick on us.
Which I'm sure someone's going to do after the show.
And if we choose your submission for the show, we'll give you something great. Like, we're going to give Mike here a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Annie Up store at annieupstore.com. Hey, the hotline. Somebody's calling.
Wow, it's a live call-in show. Speaking of live call-ins, we have live streaming coming up. We're leaving this weekend. Choctaw Resort in Oklahoma has hired us and Fala Productions to do the live streaming of the final table of its Chad Brown Challenge on Monday, April 30th, starting at noon Central Time. A lot of you have already participated on our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum, telling us what you like and don't like about live streams. You can also email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And, of course, you know, we want you to tune in at our website, antiupmagazine.com, or on our Facebook page. During the actual event and watch. And then what I want everybody to do is make sure, if you want, if you have a Twitter account and you're following us, be sure to send us questions at Annie Up Magazine during the stream. I'll have my iPad or my iPhone going, and we'll try to answer them. We'll do our best to answer them, and hopefully we'll have some guests on that you guys might want to have questions answered as well. So be sure to do some Twitter stuff with us, and we'll try to get them involved.
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely want to make this interactive. You know, and that's one of the things that, sadly, we miss from the podcast, because, you know, we tape in advance. We don't have that interaction
right
during the show. So this is kind of an opportunity for us to have some kind of interaction in a live live scene. And also, I'm sure we'll talk about this. We got 10 hours to fill, you know.
Yeah.
But we're also asking people to send us what their favorite poker scene in an otherwise non-gambling movie is. We've got a lot of great responses already, and you can add to that by emailing us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, or post it on our Facebook page or on our forum, or tweet it to us, or attach it to the leg of a pigeon, throw it out the window, whatever you need to do to get to us. But we're going to do a show on that next month, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun one.
Hey, move over, Scott. You're not the only one doing meetups. I have committed to go to the Deep Stack Charity Classic at Daytona Beach Kennel Club on May 20th. Come say hi to me. Scott's not the only one. I'm going to be there. Come say hi. We'll hang out. We'll talk about the boring stuff that Scott talks about. But no, really, I'm going to be at the Daytona Beach Kennel Club, so May 20th. And now, you know, move over, Chris Moneymaker. I know you're going to be there, but leave some room for me at the autograph table.
And then remember, you can join me in Minneapolis on May 27th. Remember, we're all going to hit that 3 o'clock St. Paul Saints baseball game there to try to get some kind of a group seating. So if you're interested, please let us know that you're going to be there. And then we're obviously going to play some cards at Canterbury Park after that. And then we'll be doing another one in Chicago on May 29th at the Horseshoe Hammond in the evening. And then we're getting ready to book our Vegas trip. We'll be out in Vegas June 25th through the 29th, I believe. And as soon as we get some details on when our Antiup meetup, we'll be out there. We'll let you guys know.
And, of course, don't forget our cruises. 2012, we have two more this year. AntiupMagazine.com/cruise. August 27th out of Port Canaveral. We still have giveaways planned at the Suncoast in Las Vegas, and November 10th out of Baltimore.
Yeah, and coming soon, there will be a giveaway. Blue Shark Optics just announced they're going to give away an Ocean View cabin for the Port Canaveral. I think he's going to do some. He's going to ask people to do a video and post it.
Ooh!
So you don't even have to put it down any money. You just got to put down a great video track. I hope he's not going to ask anybody to do a Phil Helmes impression, because no one's going to win.
But I've seen those, you know. I've people do that before. I think it was for an Ultimate Bet show on TV or something. They've had people do stuff like that. So I think we'll have a lot more success getting people to do videos than calling our hotline. Okay. Awesome. Sounds like it's been a busy week. So what's going on our Antiup news desk?
All right. Despite several developments that pointed to the possibility that Groupe Bernard Tapie's purchase of Full Tilt was in the closing stages, the company abruptly announced this week that the deal is dead. The company spokesman said the Department of Justice changed the terms of player repayment late in the process, insisting that all players be repaid within 90 days. The company said that was impossible, so it scuttled the deal. Several media reports point to PokerStars being a new suitor for Full Tilt, but the company hasn't commented on it publicly yet.
See, now, I know we're going to get a lot of guff for not making this like our main topic today or dealing with this a little more, but I just think we should wait a little longer until there's some actual... I mean, I guess they had one of the big wigs not deny this, which is interesting in itself, I guess, from PokerStars. And maybe what we could talk about is what it could mean if they did. To me, I don't think even if they did buy it, it's not going to allow them back in the United States until federal approves it anyway. There's no way because they still don't think of it as legal, right? So what they're doing is trying to shore up their, if they do it, shore up their future in America. So while we were like, wow, this is awesome, it could be great news because PokerStars and us, we had a great relationship with them. But, you know, we just don't want to speculate anything yet until actually something a little more concrete happens, right?
Yeah, what was really funny about this, first of all, when I first saw the news the morning I woke up, I use Google News kind of aggregate. There were 86 stories on Google News about this, right? Uh-huh. And you can click on the thing and you can kind of get like the summaries of all of the headlines and the summaries, and it lets you know the website or the newspaper, whoever is reporting it, right?
Yeah.
All the mainstream media ones, the headline was "To Pee Out a Full Tilt Deal."
Right.
All these little poker blogger kind of steal content from somebody else's site and rewrite and put it on my site, folks, was "Poker Stars buying Full Tilt."
I know.
And again, I'll do this all the time to the annoyance of our listeners, but if you want me to say Poker Stars is buying Full Tilt and put it on your website and that makes you feel great, go ahead. But it doesn't make it true.
Right.
So then the other interesting thing that happened this week is I was on Fifth Street Radio last night. The guys that used to be at Short Stack Radio relaunched under Fifth Street Radio, and I did my normally Wednesday night thing. And he's like, when I started the show, he's like, "So, what do we think about this PokerStars news?" And I'm like, "I don't think anything of it at all. Not one name anywhere. PokerStars is united. So at some point, something will happen here. Certainly, some of the information coming out makes it seem like it's possible. But, you know, hey, let's just wait till it comes out." Okay, great. So let's assume that PokerStars is buying it. What does this mean? We went on for half an hour about that, which really I don't like to do because what a waste of time, I think. Because if we find out next week this is all rumors, then it's a waste of time. So that's what we're doing on this show, is just kind of holding off. And, if this really does turn out to be true, then we got plenty to talk about at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Massachusetts Representative Daniel Winslow says he'll push again for a budget amendment that would legalize online poker in that state. A previous effort passed the House, but not the Senate. And usually the Senate is where stuff like this usually gets passed, isn't it?
It depends on the state. I mean, it really does. It's crazy. You can never figure out which body is more eager to get stuff done.
Yeah.
State to state. But, the other thing, our partner Poker News had a great interview with Representative Barney Frank not too long ago. I got this question last night at Fifth Street Radio. So, hey, if Poker News comes back, Full Tilt, is that going to be the push to get poker regulated? I'm like, absolutely not.
No.
I don't think it's going to help at all.
No.
But what is going to help is exactly what Barney Frank said, is that all these states are going crazy now trying to get this passed, and that is really piquing the interest of federal lawmakers, and there seems to be some movement now where folks are saying, hey, we got to get involved in this before the states go crazy with this and get some semblance of conformity going here. So,
and if we had the ability to do the flashback montage, this is exactly what I said when we first started talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Remember? I was like, the states do enough, the federals are going to be like, wait, we want our cut, and they're going to do it and try to save
us. Well, not even so much the cut, but you're probably right on that. But it's just, it really is going to be crazy to have, I would say, 50 different online poker laws in the state, but we know Utah's never going to do it. So 49 different poker laws, in the state. It's just going to be completely chaotic. All right, well, and finally, Tiger Woods is skipping this week's PGA Tour event to host a $10,000 buy-in Tiger's Poker Night in Las Vegas to raise money for the Tiger Woods Foundation. Tournament's winner gets to play in a foursome with Tiger.
Golf, right?
Well, yeah, it's going to have a pause there and let everybody else do their own bees and head joke there. But, no, you jumped right in.
Wow, very cool. That sounds reasonable. All right, cut an Annie Up check, will you?
Yeah.
I want to play in this thing.
Right. I love their... well, no, I'm not going to go there. Good luck to Tiger raising money for what I'm sure is a wonderful charity.
All right, we get to wrap up on O'Malley's move today. Let's hear part one, then we'll be back with our thoughts.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. It's later in that casino cash game, and we've lost a bit of money. We were up to $235, but now we're down to $170, which is still a $70 profit. It's about an hour later, and with the exception of one new player, it's the usual suspects. We're still the short stack. Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one calls, and we look down in the MP1 at the Queen of Hearts, Queen of Clubs. We make it $10 to go. The MP2 calls, as does the MP3, but the rest of the table folds. The two players behind us are decent. They've both worked up some nice stacks, and we've noticed they like playing any pocket pairs. The flop comes down, 7 of hearts, 6 of diamonds, 5 of diamonds. Not the greatest flop in the world, but we're going to keep up our aggression. With about $30 in the pot, we make it $20 to go. The player behind us raises to $75, and after thinking for a while, the player behind him folds. What do we do?
All right, I know I have a reputation as Folding McFolderson. but I'm sorry, I'm hard-pressed to defend anything but folding here. You know, we don't have position, we just have an overpair. It's a way-coordinated board that we have no real outs to, and our opponents have been described as willing to play any pair, and this raise on this board is consistent with the player trying to get opponents to paid out, draw their set. You know, we have two more streets of betting left, and the only thing that is going to give us any confidence continuing on is one of the two remaining queens. We've only put $30 in this pot. I don't see any reason at all here to commit more when we're essentially guessing what our opponents have.
You know, you and I always write our comments down a week before because we want to make it legit here. So I did that. I'm going to stick with that. But the one thing that he says that I didn't mention yet was he says they're willing to play any pair. And sometimes I wonder if those lines are just inserted to make us think set and we can't possibly be ahead here. And the other thing is, isn't everybody willing to play just about any pair as long as it's reasonable?
That's a very good point.
I mean, who's not willing to play any pair? I mean, really. I mean, if it's an incredible raise and then a re-raise, yeah, I'm folding deuces through nines or something. But if it's just a regular raise, you know, I don't know. So I'm just going to think to myself, my gut says shove because... Ooh. I'm not calling, but I can fold, like you said. A fold is not a bad play at all here, and I maybe would fold here because it's very coordinated. I just, if I'm being honest, I have a feeling that I would shove here. I don't know why. I'm just being honest, but I would not fault a fold. I think a fold is a fine play as well.
Well, yeah, here's the thing. I can see why people would want to shove here because, you know, you got the overpair to this person. Your opponent could be betting lots of stuff. I mean, they're... That could be. If we're talking about this situation, it's one thing. But as a matter of policy, I think it's tough when you get in these spots when you're out of position with a single pair and you're like, you know what? Yeah, I could have them beat. Well, yeah, you could have them beat. But do you really want to. What we're going to risk here? We got $170, right?
Yeah, but.
I mean, how many times are you going to have to be... I mean, if you're right here, it's great. But, you know, if you're wrong, you know, you've got five times to be wrong here. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good spot here.
Yeah. It's my gut. My gut feels like it's a shove move and that this guy is just trying to test us. I don't know. Because we were the pre-flop raiser, so... You know, we bet out. Looks like we could have ace-king. Guy doesn't believe us. He's got something with this flop. Could be ace-seven or something. Who knows? And he's just putting us to a test. I just feel like, in my gut, we're ahead. And that's not to say that we would be ahead at the end of the hand if we did shove and get called. You know, I'm just saying, I just feel like right now we have the best hand. But I would not fault a fold here. Like you said, we only put in, what, 20 and 10, $30? So, you're right, it's not that big of a loss and big of a hit to our stack, but I just feel like we're ahead. But who knows? Well, let's see what happens.
I'll say one more thing here real quick, too, is that, you know, I'd almost be more upset at my opponent for not raising here with any two cards.
Right. Raising, you know, after the flop?
Yeah.
Raising our bet,
because,
yeah.
Yeah, because we opened from under the gun plus two, so yeah, usually that's a big pair, ace-king, something like that, right? And then this is, a, like I said, a coordinated board. I would think if you're behind, not behind in terms of the cards, but after us to act and in position, that you raise 100% of the time here.
Yeah.
And get people like me to fold.
Yeah.
Because it makes sense for people like me to fold.
So, okay, right. Yeah, no, exactly, and that's the move to make. So if you're expecting that move to come, then he doesn't necessarily have to have his beat. So another reason,
whether it's right or not, and that's why it's a good move on your opponent's part.
Yeah, yeah. And it probably makes it even stronger for me.
And you'll make that same move when you're in position, which is what.
Yeah, that's why I think, that's another reason why I think I might shove here. But let's see what happens.
Hello again. I don't like a call here. It's $55 more, and there aren't many cards we want to see on the turn. Our opponent looks fairly comfortable, and as we think about it, we almost say all in two or three times. But we recollect what TJ Cloutier said. If you've got a big pair on an all-under but coordinated flop, it's not a bad idea to fold. A call would only leave us with $75, so it's either shoving or folding, and we fold. But we show the player our queens, hoping he'll oblige, and he shows us two red eights. He had 10 outs, making us about a 60-40 favorite, and once again, we fold the best hand. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying I hope to see you on the Papes Felt.
Alright, well, I'll just remind people, a good player lays down the best hand sometimes. I am not losing any sleep over this, but as my wife will tell you, I never lose sleep over anything. So.
Well, you know, if I had my Wheaties,
like a baby.
If I had my Wheaties that day and went with my gut, I'd be happy, I guess. Although he's open-ended, and an eight helps him too. There's no guarantee that you would have won the hand anyway. So
kind of the thing, yeah.
I don't fault the folder.
Like I said, he had two more outs there. I mean, two more cards to come. He had lots of ways to beat you, and you know, obviously, he had the best of it at this point. But
yeah.
So, you know, again, you're playing the long-term odds here, so...
A fold's not a bad play there.
The cover story of Annie Up's April issue delved into the complicated topic of guaranteed tournaments. Players love them, because they know there's something to play for, and they might squeeze out an overlay. But for managers, it can be a stressful endeavor, especially for rooms with cost-conscious general managers. Joining us today is someone who has been very successful playing the guaranteed game, the tournament coordinator at the world-famous Commerce Casino near Los Angeles, Sam Quinto. Sam, thanks for joining us so early today.
Thanks for having me, Scott and Chris. It's an honor to be on here. I'm just like a poker player. I mean, this time is it's a little early for us too.
All right, Sam. Well, there never seems to be a break in the Los Angeles tournament schedule, and the Commerce is back at it next week with the California State Poker Championship. Why don't you start us off today by telling our listeners what they can expect if they make the trip out to the Commerce to play in that great annual event?
Well, this is a great series. It starts May the 2nd, runs through all the way to the 20th. We have some great guarantees going on. Our opening event is a $400,000 guarantee for a $225 buy-in. There's four day one that you can play. So whatever your schedule is, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday, if you can make it any of those days, you can play this event. And if you happen to bust out on any of those particular days, you can re-enter the following day. We also have a double stack turbo with a $300,000 guarantee, four starting days, two starting heats each day. And that starts the 9th of May all the way to the 12th. And of course, we have our championship event on the end of the series, two day ones on Thursday, May 17th and Friday, May 18th, $2,080 buy-in. And we have a $500,000 guarantee on that one. And we also have some other great events, small one day and two day events. Most of them have guarantees from $25,000 to $100,000, an all-in or fold event, which is a very fun one-day event. basically speaking, all you have two choices, all-in or fold. We've gotten some gotten some great response on that event. And then Commerce is not just about Hold'em. We also provide tournaments for our Omaha 8 or better players, our horse players, our mixed game players. So if you have a chance, take a look at our schedule on commercecasino.com, and hopefully there's an event that you can play.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the guarantees, because that's the topic today. And you guys have always been successful in pulling those off, but not the least of which has been the opening event of the LA Poker Classic, a small buy-in tournament with a huge guaranteed prize pool. What is that event in particular? Why has that event been so successful?
Well, back in 2010, when myself and Matt Savage were thinking of a great concept to kick off such a prestigious tournament as the LAPC, we thought that we would put a guarantee event that set the bar for this industry, and no one has ever thought of doing or even risked doing a $1 million guaranteed tournament for such a low buy-in as $300. And we felt that that was the number that would drive people, that would make people come over and take a look at the Commerce Casino. And we did that in 2010. Wonderful success. If memory serves me, I believe we got over 5,000 players and a $1.7 million prize pool that year. So it generated a tremendous response to that event.
And the thing is, too, is you really have to know your players. I mean, you really have to know your audience and how many you think you might get for this. Do you do any, pre-tournament work, like some sort of polling or just, asking the guys, hey, you have interest in this, or do you just announce it?
No, we don't just announce it. We definitely look at some historical data. We definitely have to know your players, definitely in the area, and figure out if we can even come close to that number.
Yeah.
Obviously, we didn't expect to exceed that number by that kind of amount. We were looking at previous LAPCs and what we did on the opening event, and we did such a great two-day event the previous year, where one of the day ones where we had over 1,500 players, we said we can get there. And amazingly so, we did that and then some. So it was great.
Man, that's awesome.
All right. Well, obviously being in the poker business, we have our finger on what's going around all across the country. And the reason we did this story is because we just saw so many more guaranteed tournaments popping up, even in that didn't have them. What do you think the reason is for that? Why are people getting kind of guarantee happy now?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think after Black Friday, poker players in America needed to have their outlet for poker now, since they couldn't do it over the computer. And casinos and card rooms across the country have just determined that guarantee tournaments are the way to go to bring players in. And especially coming from the LA area, where it's just so competitive, where it's a necessity to have guarantees on your tournaments. Otherwise, players are going somewhere else. And also because of the economic times, in these economically lean times, players are looking for value when traveling for tournaments, looking for something good to play for a reasonable buy-in. So, all those factors, I think, are the reasons why you see so many guaranteed tournaments popping up everywhere now.
Well, what do you think the considerations are, or what are your considerations when you're deciding whether or not to guarantee a tournament? And then how do you decide how much to guarantee it for?
Wow, great question. It's hard to say. I don't know if there's an exact science on guaranteeing one tournament over another tournament. What I'd like to do is that you want to guarantee definitely certain events that you're trying to highlight, and my recommendation is also not to guarantee every tournament in the series. I think if you guarantee every tournament in the series, players would look at it and say, well, if I miss this one, I can always make tomorrow's.
Yeah.
And that's not what that's definitely not what you're looking to do here. You're looking to guarantee particular tournaments where you definitely want people to show up, and hopefully other factors, how much to guarantee a tournament. Once again, we're looking at historical data and trying to figure out what we've gotten in the past. And obviously, we want a number which is not only attainable, that can be exceeded, but at the same time, a number that players go, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I mean, anybody can guarantee $10,000 for a $300 buy-in and not really need to sweat it. I think a guarantee, there should be a little bit of a sweat factor for the casino and the management team, where players go, wow, that is something. I mean, they might miss it. I'm going to definitely show up. So, I mean, that's what we're looking to do. We're looking to, I think, as leaders of the industry, I think Commerce Casino, we need to do those kind of things and provide guarantees where people make them want to go.
Well, you mentioned needing to sweat it a little bit. You know, I think particularly for rooms who have never guaranteed events, it can be more than sweating. It's stressful. But I know you personally don't necessarily see a missed guarantee as a failure. Why is that?
Well, I tell you what, at least for the Commerce Casino, we're more than just a poker room. We also have a hotel facility. We have restaurants, a spa and salon, and we also have California games, which include blackjack, pai gow, and we also have an off-track betting for horse races. So, I mean, we're not just a poker room. So if we can get players to come in here and play that tournament, and if we miss the guarantee, and if they come to our facility and frequent all the other outlets, I mean, an $80,000 miss on our $1 million guarantee in our most recent LATC is not necessarily deemed a failure just because they're generating revenue in all our different outlets. We don't deem it as a failure at all. And we're most happy to provide the overlay for our loyal customers. I mean, we're very happy to do that.
And
isn't it a little bit like an advertising as well, too? I mean, if you miss one every once in a while, then it kind of gets people excited that you might miss another one.
I think it's a great marketing tool. Not only it tells people that, you know, every once in a while we're going to miss a guarantee and we're going to give money away, it also ensures our customers, lets them know that our guarantees are guaranteed, that, you know, commerce has integrity, and we as a company will do what we say we're going to do, and that's the guarantee.
when you do stress over them, you know, because obviously you didn't mention that there's a little sweat. What is it that you're stressing? Is it that you're going to get pressure from the general manager, that you're going to miss it so bad that it's going to change the way you do things? Or what is it that's really your concern?
Well, my major concern is obviously if we miss a guarantee, especially by a big number, the managers and the board will not allow us the luxury of guaranteeing events in the future. I mean, the most recently we missed a $1 million guarantee last summer during the World Series, and we missed it by a really good number. And I was very fortunate that the management has not swayed away from guaranteeing all future events. So, I mean, that's one of the major stresses. I mean, taking that ability to guarantee tournaments away would be something that I would consider disastrous, especially in this market.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned this just a little bit ago. Obviously, you're proud, as you should be, that the Commerce has never pulled or altered a guarantee when it realized it was going to miss it. But we all know there are plenty of properties that do. How damaging do you think it is for player confidence when a property does backtrack?
I think it's very damaging that, and I've seen it, I've heard it from players. When people lose confidence in the word guarantee, then they don't even regard that number in their advertisement anymore. And it's amazing how many times I get a phone call from customers that ask me, are you really guaranteeing that much money for this tournament? I mean, and it's like, yeah, that's why we put the word guarantee on it. Well, but then this particular room didn't do that. They added an extra day. I said, no, we're following this schedule. We're not altering it. This is what it's going to be. We miss it. We're going to pay it. And that's that. I mean, the fact is there's other casinos that do that, and it's unfortunate. I wish they wouldn't, because I think it damages the entire reputation of the industry as a whole. And I think, and especially in this time, we in way poker is right now perceived. I think we need to all have integrity and all follow through on what we're going to do. If you're not going to follow through with your guarantee, don't even do it.
I'm sorry, Chris.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
It's not quite the same thing as pulling back from a guarantee, but I know other properties do what I call the world famous asterisk in their ad, where they have a guarantee number with a little tiny asterisk and it's based on a number of others. Do you think that also has some kind of effect on player confidence when you have to read the fine print before you enter a tournament?
I think things that could be misleading also can be damaging. Where players have to read the fine print. I mean, I think some properties think it's sly, and they know that poker players don't read all the fine print that's on the bottom of the page, and all they see is the big number that they print that in the 24 font. and that's bad too, because when they walk, I mean, regardless if you got them in the door, if they walk in and now they realize that wasn't the case, you've basically deceived them, and they traveled all that way to be deceived, and that's going to leave a really bad taste in their mouth, and that's not good for the industry as well.
Well, you know, you guys pretty much set the magic number of $1 million as the guarantee. Where do you see the future of guarantee tournaments? I mean, do you think that number will ever increase?
Well, it's hard to really say. I mean, this guaranteed game, it's just a never-ending, changing game. I think it's definitely possible. I mean, I think that a lot of $1 million guarantees have been going around. I know a few other properties that are now doing $1 million guarantees, and I think it's going to get to that point where we're going to have to set a new number. I think, especially for us as leaders of the industry, I think we need to set that new WOW number eventually, and it's going to be time where you might have to consider 1.5 and $2 million guarantees. I'm not sure now is the time, but I think there will be a time where we're going to have to get there.
Awesome.
Well, you know, and what I think is interesting about this is, you know, $1 million is an amazing guarantee. But I think once you hit that number, it seems weird to me to think that $1.25 million or $1.5 million is that next really attention-attracting number. It almost seems to me like the next jump has to be $2 million, which seems just mind-boggling to me. Am I off on that?
You're probably not off on that. I mean, the difference between saying $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 it doesn't mean so much to the players. Is when they see that extra zero or that extra number in front of the zeros. I think that you're right. That is the. That becomes the new WOW number. So I would agree. After $1 million, I would think $2 million is the next real WOW number. So it's going to take a lot of consideration and a lot of factoring in for us to ever put something like that down. I mean, we're going to have to definitely structure the tournament a little bit differently than the way we have been doing it to provide a $2 million guarantee for a low buy-in. But I mean, something like that can be done, and we're going to figure out a way to do that.
You have 12 day ones.
1 month of day one.
That's right.
Well, you know, we were joking about that, but I was just thinking about that too. I mean, the one that we had here in Palm Beach Kennel Club, the $1 million guarantee, they had like 4 day ones, and they added an extra day to accommodate players. At some point, it does get to the point where I don't know whether players want to commit a week or 2 weeks to a $300 tournament, regardless of how big the guarantee is. Is there some kind of player fatigue that you factor in on these as well?
I think there's definitely player concern regarding how long a tournament lasts. I think, especially lately, I've noticed a trend where players are actually clamoring more for one-day events. Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, they got to go back to work. I mean, like I said, in these economically lean times, people can't invest 1 week into a tournament or even two or three days into a tournament. They're looking for tournaments that they can play on their days off or, you know, their 2 days off. And it's more difficult now to put down tournaments that take 1 week. And I've seen $1 million guarantee tournaments out in the area that take 2 weeks before they get to the day twos and day threes. So it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough now.
All right, well, Sam, hey, we appreciate you taking this time very early. I know for a West Coast poker tournament director, but we appreciate you taking the time. And before you go, remind our listeners about some of the other signature tournament series that you'll find at Commerce once the California State Poker Championship ends.
We have four major tournaments a year, not only with the California State Poker Championship in May. We also have the Commerce Hold'em Series, an all Hold'em Series event that is in September. We also have the LA Poker Open that happens in November. And, of course, our signature tournament every year, the Los Angeles Poker Classic, otherwise known as the LAPC, that happens from January all through February. And we also have some great events, actually, this summer. We're doing a combat poker event in conjunction with four radio stations here in the local LA market. So if you are from the LA area and you listen to some of the local radio stations like KISS or KLOS, take a listen to it. Great promotion coming up in June called Combat Poker, and we're also working on a poker triathlon, so keep your eyes and ears open.
Awesome.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, guys.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Anti-Up PokerCast.
All right, our hand of the week this week comes from Scott from Syracuse. Again, he says.
Again. Okay.
I was on the show not too long ago, but I always like welcome people named Scott back. It's a great name, I think.
Great Scott.
Yeah, our fans will remember that he had sent in the famous Queen 2 suited hand.
Oh, yeah, the diamonds, I think.
Yes. All right, well, he's back with another one, and he says he recovered from that hand, had a pretty good run of winning sessions over the last couple months, mostly based on re-listening to the episode and replaying in my head Chris saying, "What the hell?" when I'm about to do something I know I shouldn't. Look at that. You're like the little angel on the... I say the little devil on the shoulder of our listeners now.
Yeah, I don't think angels are saying, "What the hell?"
Well, you know, if they find themselves in hell for some reason. Took a long term hour. All right, so anyhow, Scott says he was playing this week in a 1-2 no-limit hold'em cash game at the local casino.
Was it everybody buying in for 20 and shoving? Sorry.
That's only at a casinos where there's also a 1-3 game, like the one that you were playing in. All right, Scott said he was up to $250 in the day when a very aggressive player joined our table, two seats to my right. He went through one buy-in pretty quickly and was on his second when I raised $15 with King-King, and he called out of position. The flop came 3-5-5, and I bet it down the river. He calls every street and shows down 3-5 suited.
Oh, my God.
So he called a 7.5x raise out of position with 3-5.
Wow.
He seemed to play that way all afternoon and seemed to hit way more often than I would have expected. He easily played 90% of all hands. If it wasn't raised when he got to him, he'd raise it anywhere from 7 to 17. He seemed to play lots of suited cards and connectors, hitting a ton of flush and straight draws, even when it seemed like pot odds would dictate a fold. Well, yeah, an aggressive player here doesn't care about pot odds.
Man.
No one cares about the odds of you folding.
Yeah.
So there were big pots, lots of action, and table has become very loose. Perfect! Chuck, please.
Perfect, I can have dinner on time now. See you later.
You know, when you put those words in the email, that's what I'm saying. You know what? I'm going to go get the juice. Enjoy the prime rib. I'll come back when the game's a little more sane. But no, people never do that. They go on to have a terribly difficult hand of the week to send in to us for us to unravel for them. All right, so showdown, he said if his opponent was still in, he generally had a big hand, but I don't recall him ever showing a premium hand. Oh, and by the way, he had a huge ring on a big chain around his neck that said he was from winning a big tournament. I didn't hear which one.
Huh.
Maybe he just bought a ring from somewhere, you know. Whoever actually looks at the ring.
Hey, yeah. Maybe I'll start doing that with my rings.
So after about 2 hours of playing very few hands, the villain raises to just $6 on the button, and I decide to call in the big blind with ace of clubs, six of spades. What do you think?
Jeez. A6 is the worst ace.
It is the absolute worst ace.
It's the worst ace possible.
Can't pick a wheel with it. Worst kicker outside of that.
Yeah.
Just terrible. And it's not even suited, so we don't even have the extra half a percent.
Yeah. You know, if I'm going to play this hand against this guy and I'm out of position to... I don't know. I usually fold this hand. I realize I got to call four to win. Oh, whatever it is, nine. Whatever. Not even after the rake and everything. So, 2-1 on my money with A6 off against a maniac in position. I don't know. Doesn't sound like.
Yeah, that's not a recipe. Emerald's gonna go bam.
Yeah, exactly. So, to be honest, I mean, I'm really thinking about folding. But if I'm gonna play it, I probably re-raise this guy and say, haha, you know. And if you want to come along, I'm gonna, you know.
Yeah, and then he's gonna 3-bet your butt, and then you're gonna go. Arr.
Yeah, B3. I didn't hear that he had a history of 3-betting in there. I just heard that he was.
Well, no, he's just
cards,
aggressive.
But,
so I'm just guessing. Yeah. That's probably what he
does. But really, I think I'm just letting his hand go. It's not a very good hand. At least make it an ace 5 suited or an ace 10 suited or something. But ace 6, that's just horrid.
Yeah, you know, I think what we have here is a frustration call.
Yeah.
You know, this guy's just bowling all the time. Oh, I got an ace now. Now I'm going to see if I can trap him. And almost every time you set this trap, it's you that falls into the leaves and the twigs.
Yeah.
And not the other guy, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think you're just going to wait till you're in position and play back when he's in your position. You know,
and you're going to be in position on this guy a lot more than you're not.
Yeah.
He's on your right, so just let it go and take advantage of him later.
All right, well, he did call, he said, and he says, not very good. I know. Q Chris. What the hell? But it was only $4 more, and I was getting frustrated.
That's like a huge thing. You should never say to yourself, it's only something.
Yeah, see, two strikes right there.
Yeah.
Only $4 more and getting frustrated. Yep. We need a Chris hologram of the Chris on your neck, on your shoulder. It was on both shoulders going, What the hell? All right, we have 5 players to the flop.
Wait. So there were limpers before the button raiser? I didn't realize that.
Apparently.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that. So there's like 3 limpers before us, before the raiser guy. So that's $6 in the pot already. There's a chance these guys are all going to call too. Maybe I do just call. I don't know. I thought it was heads up against this guy. I thought it was me and him only.
Maybe
I do call the $4 knowing that the other guys are probably going to call 4-2 and then I'm going to get 20 something in the pot for $4. 5-1 on my money with A6, I might call. So, geez. That makes it worse.
You gotta hope for a good flop then.
It's still
not $4.
I don't know though. 5-1 on my money. I might call then.
Discount's not always a deal.
It's true. No, that's true. And I'm not really totally defending a call here, but I think I might actually call now.
All right. Well, now that we know there are 5 players to the flop, comes tray of clubs, 5 of clubs, 6 of clubs, and remember we have ace of clubs,
yes.
6 of spades.
Yes.
So top pair of top kicker.
Well, I think
yes,
he means
correct.
Yes, it is top kicker, and it's also the flush draw.
Trying to think of the yes is the kicker. We're the big flush draw, and we are first to act.
Yeah, we got a big sea of people out there, and we got a maniac to act behind us. Might be interesting to check raise here. Knowing that this guy's a maniac, right? So he's a maniac, he's got to bet. I mean, we've got to go with what we've been told. So this guy's truly a maniac, then I'm going to check and see what people do in the middle, because I got a huge hand now.
Yeah.
You know?
I think what's interesting here is, I mean, if you bet, are you building a pot? Are you inducing someone to try to raise you because of the board? Or if you bet here, do you chase everybody out except maybe the crazy guy? And to be honest, sometimes the crazy guy gets out of the way in these situations, too. That's what makes him so hard to play against. Or do you check here and know that somebody's going to bet here, and then we can, you know, maybe limp and disguise our hand or check raise? There's all kinds of options here, I think.
Well, I feel like a bet out might keep people from playing with us, whereas if we check and fake weakness, the maniac might put some money, might be our chance to make some money, without somebody just catching up on the turn for free, you know, with hitting like a big card. And then we don't get our club on the end, so the it was pointless. So I feel like I want to get some money in now, and if I bet out, I could induce a bunch of folds. Not that I want everybody to fold, but I think that betting now might scare people. you know, you're in the worst position, you're betting out, you know, people are going to be like, wow, he must have hit that. And if they don't have anything at all, they're not going to call. But if they feel like everyone's folding, and it gets to them, they might say, well, I can take this pot now and bet. And then you get some money in the pot at least. So I feel like a check raise is probably the best way to at least get some money in the pot for us with top pair, top kicker, and then the ace high flush draw, which obviously the straight flush is still the concern here. And,
true, yep.
So I don't know. I feel like I'm checking.
All right. Our hero decides to bet out $20 to see if he can take it down. Do we want to take this down?
I don't think so. I think we want to get some money in. To win after the rake and everything, to win $18 for your six, you know, or whatever it is, you know, and then you're betting 20 into a, you're betting more than pot, essentially. You don't even have that good of a hand, really. I mean, you have a good hand. You have a good, strong hand now. It's possible abilities, but.
A hand with lots of potential.
Potential, yeah. So.
Kind of like the guy on the Mel Kiper draft board.
I don't know if I want to bet pot here. I'm still checking.
All right. We get three folds, and the villain calls on the button. So now we're finally heads up.
All right, well, we're heads up.
A pot of $65.
Interesting call.
Yes, I don't like when an aggressive player calls. Very, very concerning.
Well, you know what, too? If this person is the graduated from the Scott Long Academy of Poker, which we know he didn't because he's aggressive, but he might have taken one of your online courses. You know, people who have suited connectors in position like to make small raises when a lot of people are in the pot already so that they get their pot odds up. And I know you were saying before, this guy doesn't care about pot odds, just cares about pushing you out. But something like 7-8 could very well be in this guy's arsenal. Who knows? But, I mean, he could very well have a flush already with babies, and now he's just stringing you along. But I think if he had the flush, he might raise you again. So I don't know. This guy's truly a maniac. The call is kind of perplexing. But I just want to keep that in the back of your mind that in position, small raise with four limpers or three limpers previous generally can be taken as this guy's got a small pair and he's open to flop a set, or he could have suited connectors in position to get the right odds to play the hand. So just throwing that out there.
Yep. All right. Well, the pot's $65 from our heads up now. The turn is the ace of spades, so our board now is straight of clubs, five clubs, six of clubs, ace of spades, and now we have top two.
Okay, well, now I'll definitely bet. You know, you always hear about, you read about two poker pros pontificating that they don't ever want to go broke with just one pair. Well, now we have two. We have top two and still the nut flush, well, the ace high flush draw. I would probably get it all in here if he let me. So I realize we're probably behind because it's hand of the week, but I don't care. At this point, I'm playing this hand for top two and the redraw to the nut flush, or whatever you want to call it. So there's how much in the pot now?
65.
Yeah, I'll bet 50.
I wonder if with the aggressive guy who just called, whether we might get more value by checking and letting him try to take this pot from us now.
Well, that's true.
I'm with you. I don't mind getting my stack in now with top two pair and ace high flush draw.
I just don't want to be wrong on that. If he checks behind, I'm going to kick myself, and then he's going to hit his four out straight in the river. So, you know what I mean? I really want to get some money in now while I can, while this guy's calling us and he's a maniac. You know, I would think that if I made a bet of 40 or something and this guy really wanted to take it away from us, he would try to raise now.
Yeah, and I guess the flip side is... there's not a lot of downside to betting here, right? You know, if he folds, then you're not going to get anything more out of him anyhow.
Right.
Unless he catches up, which you don't want. And if he raises you, we already said that we're fine getting it in here, right?
Yep.
Okay. All right, well, our hero decides to bet 40, about two-thirds of the pot.
Okay.
And the villain just calls.
Oh, man. Well, this is what he did before. This is what he did before with 3-5, right? He just kept calling.
Yep.
Wow. All right, come on, ace.
All right, the pot's $145 now. The river is the king of clubs. Bingo, bango, bongo. Or, as I prefer to say, Ricky Ticky Tavi. Never caught on, though. I don't know why.
That's because we all misspelled it.
Yeah, that's right. No one knows how to spell Ricky Ticky Tavi, probably. He did get bingo, bango, bongo right, though. Yeah, so you're probably on to something there. All right, so our final board now is straight of clubs, five clubs, six of clubs, ace of spades, king of clubs. We do have the ace high flush, but as you reminded us at the top of the hand of the week, it is not the nut flush.
No, and those calls just calling knows he's never going to be beating his hand, you know, it could be interpreted that way. But you just can't put it. You got a $150 pot in front of you. What do we have left? I mean, really?
Oh boy, we started. Well, we said we were up 250 on the day. I don't know what that means. I don't know how much we actually had.
All right. Well, the Maniac's on his second buy-in, so he can't have that much in front of him, right? I mean, how much could he have left? That.
Yep.
I just can't. I can't let this hand go for no matter what. I'd make a value bet here and about like 100, and then when the guy raises all in for another 50 or whatever it is, I'd have to call, and then he can show me the 4-7 of clubs, and then we can vomit all over the table and ask for a table change. So,
which we should have done it before the hand starts.
Yes,
regardless of how this turns out.
Yes. So let's bet 100.
All right. Well, our hero bets out 50. The villain says, "Do you have the ace?"
Oh no!
Raises me to 200, putting me all in.
Man, he's got the street fudge. Brutal. Jeez, I can't let it go, Scott. I can't let it go for a straight flush. I mean,
no, I mean, I'm sure there. Well, I'm convinced there are better players out there than we are, but it would be impressive for me to watch somebody be able to fold this hand here.
I have to admit that if it was the home game and I was holding the ace of clubs, that Keith would be holding the 4-7 of clubs, and I would lose my entire stack, or almost my entire stack, and then have to scratch and claw to come back. And but I just can't fold this hand. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, we call immediately, literally without thinking. You know, I'll give you a pass on not thinking here. I mean, you probably should be thinking, but come on. I mean, what are you? You could think all day, I think, and you still got to make this call, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Our villain turns over the deuce of clubs, 4 of clubs.
Yeah.
I never considered that possibility. I've never seen a flop straight flush in my life.
Pastor might say. Oh, man. This wasn't rocket science. When it's hand of the week, it's not difficult to put him on the straight flush.
If only we knew it was going to be the hand of the week while we're playing.
Yeah, that's right. See, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. From now on, when you're at the poker table, think of every hand as hand of the week, and you will find yourself folding 99.5% of the time. Because really, why is he sending in hand of the week unless he lost that hand? There's no other reason to send that in.
Nope.
It's a pretty mediocre type of deal until you realize you have the nut flush against the straight flush, and your nut flush is not the nut flush, which has happened to me when we played, as Fassel likes to call it, Laredo, even though it's Juarez. I'm like, I got nut. Like, no, this is the nut. Oh, no. So what are you going to do? You're going to lose some money when you play poker. You're going to win some money. And in this case, you lost some money.
Yep.
Brutal.
That happens. Well, he has a couple of post-epilogue questions here. I think most of them we answered. But he said, should I have seen it when you raised 3X on the river? It would have been hard, if not impossible, to fold it there. Should I have seen it before then? Should I have played more cautiously on the flop and the turn? I think he might have played ace-king the same way up until the river. I think he would have played a big flush draw the same way, too, except I doubt he would make the raise with 4 clubs on the board with, at best, queen high. How do you play a guy against a guy like that, someone who calls a 7.5x raise with 3-5, etc.? It was hard and possible to define his hand by any reasonable preflop raise. Do I raise to $30 with king-king? Just request a table change? Take up a new hobby? Go back to golf? Thanks for all your great help and entertainment.
Okay, I'm going to give you the same advice that I was witness to on the golfing range at the Wallingford Country Club when I was 21 years old. Bartender named Ron came down to the range, still dressed in his like little tux tie and tux shirt. And we were down there. It was a Monday, and we were playing golf, and we're on the range warming up. And a couple of members were there with us. And he comes over to the range and says, Mr. Smith, talking to one of the members, hey, I want to know if I've been playing a little bit, and I want to know if you can analyze my swing and give me some advice. And he's like, sure. So this guy, Ron, you know, takes the vest off, grabs a driver and a ball and tees it up, takes a swing, and I'm not lying at all when I tell you the ball went backwards. The ball literally went 2 yards in reverse when he hit it. Somehow it happened. We don't know how, but it went on an angle that it literally went behind him for 2 yards. And the member, and everybody's cackling. I mean, it's hilarious. They're laughing. The member says to him, all right, Ron, look, here's the deal. Here's my advice. I really think you need to take 2 weeks off and then quit. So, no, I don't think that our hero here should take 2 weeks off and quit. But if you're not comfortable playing against someone like this, then and you don't have a defense for it, I would tend to move. The best thing I can say is you played this hand out of position against a Maniac, and that's the last thing you want to do. Now, of course, if you were in position, which I think you were on the King's hand, there's really nothing you can do except really think about what kind of hand this guy has to keep calling you the whole way when there's two fives on the board. What could he possibly have? So you might want to slow down when you're in position, at least take a street off, and then on the end, if he tries to bet into you, you make that decision and try to minimize your losses. Yeah. But on this hand, you know, we were thinking about A6 folding. We found out there were other limpers in the hand. We kind of made a decision to call, and then we got trapped. But I don't think this guy would have played Ace-King the same way. If he was raising all kinds of crap earlier and he has limpers ahead of him, he's not just going to raise to 6 with Ace-King. And he's certainly not going to keep calling you with Ace-King with nothing on the flop.
Yeah, I mean, the genius of how this guy plays is you really can't figure out what he's doing. At any point, you have absolutely no idea what he has. And that is a genius. Now, I mean, you have to be a good enough player to profit from that if you play that way. You can't just... I don't think anybody can go out and just play crazy. You're going to go broke, right?
Right.
But as an opponent, it's very, very difficult to play against somebody that does that.
Well, the other thing in this situation, too, is it's 2012, and of course all the planets are aligning to remove the gravitational pull and kill us into space. So this is kind of what had to happen on this hand with you. I mean, you literally had to have A6. You had to have a reason cheap enough to call. You had to have the Maniac flop a straight flush, which is like 7 trillion to 1. You had to have the nut flush club in your hand. You had to flop top pair, then top two pair, and then... you know, make the nut flush. I mean, so many things online for you to lose this hand. This will never happen to you again.
No, absolutely not.
So you got to take it with a grain of salt. And but again, the proper thing to do with Maniacs is to be in position with him and then re-raise him with hands that are better than what he's been playing with, and then just bet him strong and hope he doesn't flop three of a kind. If he does, you're in position, so take a street off and minimize your losses.
Yep. All right, Scott, obviously you got some swag a couple months ago, so you're not going to get anything this time. But you learned a valuable lesson.
Yes, yes.
But everybody else, if you send your hands of the week to podcast@anniemagazine.com, you might get something swell, like a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes Store.
All right, another great show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.